So, first a disclaimer. This is some fun little toy model that I've been playing with. It doesn't have much physics. It has no MHD, so everybody can relax. But I'll be around for 4 months, for almost a month, so maybe we can talk MHD as well. So today I wanted to discuss a result that connects, that possibly connects the star formation law with the topology of the ISM itself. But let me first motivate the discussion with a brief overview. So this is the famous star formation law that relates, that is a nonlinear correlation between the star formation rate per unit surface area with the surface density of the gas. It is observationally established in globally averaged quantities of different these galaxies. Remarkably, it holds for regular spiral galaxies all the way to starbursts, Hulings. But also, it holds for when you look inside the galaxy and you average over some region, either annuli or patches inside the galaxy of scales from kiloparsec to several hundred parsec. The exponent, the slope of this power law is what interests me, and it is the most frequently quoted value is close to 1.5 with a large scatter. It can go down to 1.3 or up to maybe 2, depending on the kind of observational uncertainties you have. So there are observational uncertainties associated with the slope. Traditionally, this has been interpreted simply because the star formation rate has to be proportional to the gas available to make stars. So it has to be proportional to the density of the gas in the galaxy over some star formation timescale. Usually, for the timescale, people quote freefall time, dynamical time. This and a whole bunch of other timescales. Elmer Green has a beautiful review explaining all different possibilities, and all of them have have this nice scaling of the inverse square root of the density of the gas itself. So clearly, if you plug this in here, you get the density, the gas density goes upstairs, and you get this beautiful nonlinear scaling. And of course, if you make the extra assumption that the scale height, the disk height doesn't depend, that it doesn't vary very much from galaxy to galaxy, then you get the observationally established law. Although very beautiful and straightforward, it has complications. Let me start with my conceptual complication. Star formation is a very local phenomenon. It only takes place at these high density cores, star forming cores, that have scales, subparsec scales usually. While the density dependence of this time scale that has to come up to the numerator is associated with the mean density of the gas of the galaxy. I'm not sure how meaningful this transition is, because, for example, we know that ISM is clumpy. So, for example, you can have a whole bunch of dense clumps of gas spread out over a large, huge region, and when you average over this region, you get a low density. So this is your numerator. But everything happens in the relevant timescale for anything to happen is the timescale associated with the dense gas of those clumps. So clearly, this is very a murky kind of transition to make. There are also numerical complications. Simulations have shown that you can get this beautiful nonlinear scaling, although you are still assuming that the star formation timescale is constant. Finally, there are observational complications. In dwarf galaxies, observations tend to...
Star formation time is constant. in years, or did you, was any normalization?
The star formation, the gas consumption timescale is constant.
Yeah.
So in dwarf galaxies, observations seem to show that this scaling, this slope, is much steeper than 1.5, can go up to maybe 3.5. Finally, if you look at, as Mark pointed out before, if you look how the dense gas correlates with star formation, as traced by some molecule like HCN, you get a very much linear relation instead of a non-linear one.
So for the steeper than 1.5, is that when computed using total gap surface density or using only molecular?
Oh no, that's total. If you put molecular, sometimes you recover 1.5, yes. Some other times you don't.
Okay.
These results are interesting, and if you take this one together with the classical star formation law and you combine them, the right hand sides are the same, so the left hand sides are the same, so there is a correlation between the left hand sides. So a non-linear correlation between the dense gas surface area and the total gas surface area is implied. And the result that I wanted to show is that this kind of correlation between dense gas and total gas arises naturally in a multifractal density field. So what I've done is just playing around with multifractal models using the random B model for fully developed turbulence. I made a cube of multifractal density and defined a density threshold above which I define my gas to be dense. And see how when you take patches of this cube, how the dense gas correlates with the total gas in those patches. And interestingly enough, this crosses, so the result or the results of different patches, it crosses a patch in the density field. And the there is an interesting nonlinear correlation that is developed. The solid line shows the linear slope, and the dashed line shows has a slope of 1.5.
So I. Could you describe how this random beta model corresponds to, say, the results people get in simulating supersonic isothermal turbulence?
It has been used, yeah. People who. This was originally developed to study intermittency in isothermal turbulence, but I use it for density. Because.
Does this give you a lot of normal feedback?
Yes, I'm coming to all this, yes. So interestingly enough, I found this non-linear correlation, and I thought, you know, this is intriguing. So maybe it's worth playing around more. But of course, there are all sorts of questions you have to address, such as how robust is this? How much does it depend on the kind of multifractal you have? And how much does it depend on the your density threshold, what you define as dense gas? So these plots are trying to address these questions. On the left, I show density PDFs for different multifractal density fields for different realizations. A natural consequence of multifractal fields is that they do have log normal PDFs. And as you can see, I have constructed several multifractals. You can play around with the parameters of the multifractal, and you can make any kind of PDF you like. So I have made some narrow PDFs and some wider PDFs that only one side is shown, so they go up. So different colors correspond to different PDFs and different multifractal realizations. And on the left, I show the dependence of the slope of this correlation. So essentially, I have taken a fit, a power law fit of all these crosses that I showed you before. So this is how the slope of this correlation changes with the definition of your density of your dense gas, the density threshold. So if we start from the left, the low left corner, we see that if you define as your dense gas the whole gas, then you correlate the total gas with the total gas with itself, so you get a linear, exactly linear slope, so the slope is 1. But as you move your density threshold to higher and higher values, the slope changes. You get nonlinear correlations. But there are two interesting things to notice. This increase doesn't go forever. It doesn't. The slope doesn't increase indefinitely. But instead, it turns over, and it seems to saturate at some density, at some slope. Although you, even if you keep increase your density threshold, the very interesting thing though is that the slope of this, the saturation slope of all these multifractals, seem to be different for different realizations, for different PDFs, and it is higher for narrower PDF. For narrower PDFs, which is interestingly enough what simulations find for dwarf galaxies. So it seems that dwarf galaxies have much narrower puffy ISM, so the PDF is much narrower there. And as a consequence, the slope is higher and you get a much, much steeper maybe star formation low. As you increase the width of the PDF, if you keep getting wider and wider PDFs, the slope, the saturation slope goes down, but it doesn't go down indefinitely either. You don't reach 1. Instead, there seems to be a floor at 1.5 or so. And even if you keep increasing the width of your PDF, and even if you increase the density threshold, you keep finding 1.5. So there seems to be insensitivity to the kind of to the width of the PDF. So you can have a very wide PDF and still get the 1.5 as long as you move above an order of magnitude or so of your mean density.
That's your multifractal structure only for density, or can you?
No, this is only density.
Okay, you could generalize to include velocity.
I haven't tried. So, what does that imply about this nonlinearity have to do with the PDF? I believe that the nonlinearity of the law arises because of the non-universality of the PDF. So the PDF is not constant from in places of different surface densities. Higher surface density, higher average density implies wider PDF, and so you are sampling, you move more and more of your gas to higher densities, and that's why you get this nonlinearity. So in conclusion, if you combine a multifractal topology of the ISM with we saw that this alone can give you a nonlinear scaling of the dense gas with the total gas. Now, if you combine, if you assume something about what happens at the higher densities, and how you can make the transition from high densities to the actual star formation, and we can argue, I believe, about constant or density-dependent, maybe, timescales. As long as the timescale basically is roughly constant, it doesn't need to be exactly constant, but if it doesn't vary too much, because of this insensitivity to the density threshold, I believe that you can get and naturally and the slope of the star formation law. And this is interesting because it arises naturally without many fudge factors, without knobs to turn, and it seems to have a good behavior consistent with observations. Thank you. I can show you, but I don't have it. Actually, I played around with the picture because one question was, well, does it look like the ISM, right? It turns out that you can play around, and if you randomize your faces, when you the way you create the multifractal is you take a density, an initial pattern cube with a mean density, and you divide it, and each daughter cell gets a fraction of the gas. Now, the way that you distribute the gas gives you different morphologies, different multifractals. If you keep the fraction of the gas constant every time you do this in every level of hierarchy, then you get a monofractal. If you if the fraction is not the same for every cell, you get a multifractal. But the way you distribute the gas in phases, in position, right? If cell one gets always the same fraction, then you get a very something like a Sierpinski response, right? Which is not very natural. If you randomize the phases, but you keep the total, of course, constant, it has to average to one, right? It has always to add up to one. Then you get a very random-looking field. Now, if you put some preferred direction and you always keep putting the largest fraction of mass in one direction towards the x or y direction, then you get a very filamentary structure. So you can play around with the morphology, but the morphology doesn't change the topological properties. So you have the same exact PDF. You have the same multifractal looking very different.
So, as you might guess, I'm very interested in the star formation rate. So, have you given any thought to what this model implies for the coefficient as opposed to the slope?
No normalization. Just the slope.
Okay.
So far.
Do you have any ideas how you might extend it to include?
Then you need to put some physics in the small scales, and. I believe there is a way to make a connection, and I believe this is a promising kind of approach, because I have made some tests in actual simulations where you do physics. It's not a toy model anymore, and it turns out that the density fields in simulations do have multifractal properties. So there are these mathematical tests you can do to see if your density field or any scalar field is multifractal or not. And doing that in the art simulations, it turns out that the result is positive. The density field seems to be a multifractal. So, but all these are coming. Yes.
Do you have a feeling for the threshold that you set for the star-forming gas? If you translate that to density, I mean real physical densities, what would they be typically? How far above the average density of your...
Well, in the plot I showed you, the properties do not seem to matter. Do not seem to be very sensitive. The slope doesn't seem to be very sensitive to the density threshold as long as you are far enough away from the average.
Yeah, so
right.
Far
but
yeah.
How far? Well, it seems like this is a logarithmic scale. So as long as you go two orders of magnitude or so above, it seems not to care anymore. Now, what that means physically, it's a different discussion. But as long as you, if you invoke some kind of threshold argument for star formation, then I believe you can go to this slide and say, well, any kind of theory you pick, if it is turbulence that controls star formation, or if magnetic fields are important, in either case, there seems to be a threshold that you have to exceed in order to get things to collapse. So if you invoke such a threshold, then you can make an argument for a timescale that doesn't really depend on the average density anymore. And as long as the timescale is independent, it will just give you, it will increase the spread of the slope, but it will not change the slope.
Yeah, so I just wanted to emphasize the point that Mark made, that in the theory that he described for the Kempfisch, for the, what you call the star formation law, that we had both the coefficient and the exponent.
Of course, yes.
Okay. So, but I'm wondering then, in, if you could compare your results more with what Mark said. In particular, you're emphasizing this constancy of the gas consumption time, whereas Mark showed observational evidence that that's not valid. It was more like the equation would have been originally, whereas the rate of change of the density is the density divided by the freefall time. So in other words, the star formation rate for the consumption rate per freefall time appears to be a constant over a wide range of density. So how do you reconcile, rather than, that says that the consumption time equals is proportional to the freefall time. And you seem to be saying, no, the consumption time is constant.
No, I didn't say anything about the consumption time. I think, are you referring to this slide?
Yeah.
This is work done by Andre in 2003. And all that he was trying to show is that you don't need this nonlinear scaling of the timescale to get the nonlinearity in the law. So even if, it doesn't mean that it is, but even if the time scale is assumed to be constant, you still get this nonlinear slope. And that's why this result was interesting. But it doesn't mean that it has to be necessary.
Oh, I see. So you're saying you could have gone ahead and print, we don't know, but if you put in
right.
But the time scale equal a proportional
right.
Football time, you might have got the same answer.
Actually, most simulations, right, actually put it in. It goes into the box. I mean, you implement the star formation subgrid model usually has the timescale to depend on the density.
Mm-hmm.
But what this shows that is that you don't really need it to get the nonlinearity. That doesn't mean it's not there.
Right. But I mean, that's sort of a scaling thing, right? I mean, this is just how you implement the star formation recipe once you lose resolution. The actual effect of the freefall time, you know, to the scaling the bio discovery of density is of course in any simulation. Right? Because you include gravity.
Well yeah,
so
but
high density.
Yeah, but then I believe that if you invoke such a relation between this time scale and the average density, so what you're saying is that in large scales, right, things are always going in a dynamical time scale. So if you average over the star formation, the density, you always get this. But I do not exactly understand how this can be tied to star formation. I mean, that's why I gave this counterexample of a clumpy medium where things are happening much faster locally, but if you average out, right? So I'm not sure.
But so that example of the clumpy medium, that was an interesting one, because that's clearly not an equilibrating configuration.
No.
So I'm wondering if you've got something that's forming stars over a time that's, you know, long compared to its equilibration time, say the Milky Way, then it seems like, you know, you're always going to be limited by the slowest scale. It's always going to be limited by how quickly can I get mass to go from big puffy stuff down to the little cores. I mean, once I've made the dense cores, you know, if you told me that it takes 100 freefall times to turn a core at a density of 10 to the 7 per cubic centimeter into stars, I would claim that would not change the total star formation rate in the galaxy one iota. because you'd still be limited by how long it takes, by the rate at which you can make those 10 to 7 per cubic centimeter cores.
Sure, but that dependence, this large scale and small scale connection, I believe it's more complicated than just time scale argument. Very much similar to what you are saying. I mean, there are many steps you can take before you can go from this large scales to the small scales. And I'm not sure that in a steady state environment, the large scales actually are responsible for are the limiting factor for star formation, because there are cases where you have very high densities but not much star formation going on, and cases where you do have high density and lots of star formation is going on. So I'm not sure how this is, you know, how what the, I don't think that the relation from large scales to small scales can be trivialized in such an argument.
Could you explain why this interesting result that you have, that it's that your slope, your parallel saturates, doesn't matter how far you go, you know, in density anymore, that you always get the same slope? Is there? Yes, that's right. So you're 10 to the 2, 10 to the 3, 10 to the 4, it's the same.
Yeah, that's why I think it's an interesting result. The wider you, okay, as the PDF gets wider and wider, you put more and more of your mass into high densities, right? But it seems to, the slope seems to saturate. And it doesn't want to go down. I mean, I tried the highest.
Explain again how you define the slope, because
I've got a lot of. Oh yes, the slope comes is just the fit of those points. So I take this is a log log plot. So I take a power log fit and compare and just plot the slope. On the y-axis.
Is the gas above a certain density?
Yes, the x-axis is how I define what goes in the y-axis here.
Well, but eventually, for a higher threshold, that sigma dense must be zero. So your slope,
fewer number of points. That's correct. That's why the error bars here increase.
Right. Yeah, what I'm saying is all of those PDFs, I mean, the narrower ones you show, they do turn over at some point, right? Like, you know, they hit this maximum and they turn down. I'm wondering if you tried, you know, there you only went out to 10 to the 4. If you went out to 10 to the 6.
You cannot go to 10 to the 6 there because you don't have many points there, right? I mean, in a log normal.
Well, that's because of the limitations of your resolution. I mean,
not necessarily. In a log normal, this is not parallel. It will not extend forever, right?
It's going in exponentially, but I mean,
exactly.
At infinite resolution, there's always.
Well, there is no okay, but there is no infinite.
I guess the point I'm making is that I think, you know, yes, you've got a very broad plateau where it saturates, but eventually, if you went up far enough, I think it would have to turn back down.
But that's not the fraction, that's the slope. But what I don't understand is how does the sigma changes, how does the PDF changes across increasing sigma? In your previous
yes. This is actually this plot. What this shows is PDFs of different patches in a multifractal density field. You take different patches.
No, can I stop you? Can I stop you? Go back to figure two. Go back.
Okay.
To the slope. No, the previous one. The slope. Urana on the x-axis to the right, light or to the top, to higher sigma.
Yeah.
So you're assuming that something changes, or is the same PDF as you go to the right? Is the same?
No. It cannot be the same PDF. That's why I tried to show you this PDF. The PDF that each point here is a patch in a density, a multifactor density field, and each patch. Each patch has a different PDF.
Okay.
And that's why you get the non-linearity. You cannot assume, if you assume a universal constant PDF, you get a linear slope.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So can we go back then to your best resolved curve? That yes, the one, the bottom one, just does show this flattening, the very high densities. I mean, you've stated the fact that do you have an explanation why that's saturated? You still haven't given an explanation.
No, I find it very interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
But it's an intrinsic property of the multifractal density field. I'm not sure how to give a pedagogical answer. I'm not sure.
Well, I guess it would be interesting to try. I mean, because you're going out to 10 to the 4 there in your PDF. I mean, you clearly, you know, the black one keeps going past 10 to the 4. So I imagine
it goes to 10 to the 5. Yeah.
Right. So have you tried using an overdensity of 10 to the 5? And is it?
Oh, yeah, but the PDF, what it tells you, it falls off exponential. So what it tells you is you get less and less points there. So eventually you run out of points, right?
Mm-hmm. So right. You run out of, I'm saying is you run out of
these points. You run out of patches that contain high enough, dense enough gas. That's
right, but you could always, I mean, you could always go to higher resolution.
Yeah, but you can keep playing this game forever. But I believe that this shows. I mean, this shows to a satisfactory, you know.
Mark, what I don't understand is once he's well past the peak, there's no feature out there. What is going to change to 10 to 5?
I think it's just that because it's an exponential, it's not. You know, it's not a power pi, it's falling off exponentially, and so when you're fitting it to a different power, you know, you're fitting different segments of this exponential curve to power laws. And I think eventually, you know, the power law...
I'm not sure this is actually...
I guess what I'm saying is, I'm not sure I would... I don't know. I'm skeptical that... I mean, because, okay, so Chris, look at the purple dot dash one. It turns over at about 30.
No, 3. This is 3. It's slow 3, right?
You
mean the density? Okay. Yeah.
Rogan over Roundup got 30. Mm-hmm. And if you compare to the PDF for that one, that's well past the peak. So the turnover is way past the peak, even for that one. And so I guess what I'm saying is, I mean, this may not matter for the physics of your model, but it's not obvious to me that if you could afford it computationally, that black line wouldn't eventually go back down.
Well, that's why I have so many lines here. I mean, if you keep increasing the width, right, and going to higher.
Well, I think Mark wants you to keep the same width, but just go to higher.
Because you run out of points.
That's no, then you do a bigger simulation, and you get more points.
No, but he'll run out.
No, it's a cutoff. So you run out of points that have that many.
There's a box.
Bigger box will not help you because.
You keep on going. I don't understand, because this curve is just going down. So if I have a bigger and bigger box, I will sample farther and farther out on the PDF.
Okay.
And then you'll get the overhead. You could not. Your error bars, as you said, is because you had only a small number of points.
Yeah, okay. I understand now what you're saying. So bigger box, though. In a multifractal environment where everything is scale-free, bigger box essentially means you are averaging over smaller and smaller regions. You can keep the box the same,
sure,
but you're
sure.
averaging so smaller and smaller, right? And if you go to very, very tiny little regions, eventually you correlate the dense gas with the dense gas, and you retrieve a linear thing. But this, is that what you're, now I understand. But this, okay.
Yeah, the point is that black line should go back to, should it's got this broad peak at 1.5, but eventually if you went out to rho density of a rho naught is high enough, it should come back down.
Oh, okay, so
this is a purely academic point.
Okay, if you zoom in.
Right,
yeah.
if that's what you're saying, if you zoom in to high density region, right, then you are sampling only high density stuff.
And so that will come back down.
Yes, and then you sample, you know, you correlate high density with high density, and then you get the linear thing. But this is not, actually I have this, I have another plot in the paper. So may I refer you to this?
Yeah.
That shows that if you keep sampling instead of in the x-axis, so essentially what you're doing is you're changing the x-axis. You keep the y-axis the same, but you change the x-axis as you zoom in. So you correlate dense with dense, and then it's like sampling HCN with star formation, or HCN with ammonia. I mean, you get a linear thing.
I think we're still talking past each other, but I want to hold it up longer.
Okay. Actually, I wanted to raise a question. Maybe Paul could comment on it. What we'd like to do, I'm sure you'd like to do also, is have an analytic theory for why it flattened out. And you should be able to calculate a lot. And the problem is, when we have this beautiful analytic formula for the PDF, you know it's log normal, so you can do, at point-wise statistics, you can do beautiful. But there's, as I understand it, there's yet no theory that will tell you what's going on in the next point. So you don't actually have a nice simple analytic theory that tells you what the column density distribution is or the mass distribution above some density. Is that true? And so you just have to rely on the numerical model.
Well, actually, we try even to measure the fractal dimension, not even the multi-fractal dimension. Even measuring the fractal dimension in the largest simulations, it's very hard. And you can barely find range if you can measure fractal dimension. Mm-hmm. So, in practically speaking, using the simulation, you wouldn't be able to go very far in terms of qualifying, because you really need the scale-free range to wide enough, and it would be very hard to measure this numerically. Analytically, I don't know how would you go analytically computing that from the Navier-Stokes equation.
Well, there is a simple thing about the log normal PDF. So, for example, one of the assumptions that Mark made in his presentation was, so you know what the PDF of the densities is, and then we assume that around every high density there was, in fact, enough mass to make a gene mass. But we don't know that.
No, but I mean, you cannot invert the problem. I mean, you don't have the PDF doesn't define fractal or a multi-fractal, but so you cannot really invert the problem. By knowing the PDF, you don't know how to.
Yes, actually, may I point out here that it's not the PDF that is doing the nonlinear scaling.
Yeah.
It's how the PDF changes from one part of the multifractal to another. If you have, so I tried this with a monofractal. A monofractal has a universal PDF, and it doesn't work. You get a linear thing. So it's not the PDF itself. It's not the fact that you get a log normal, a beautiful log normal. It's how the log normal changes its width from place to place. Mm-hmm. That's what I realized.
So the question will be, is that...
That's why it's not so difficult to interpret.
So the question will be, is that local variation of the PDF consistent with the global log normal?
Yes, PDF? That's exactly the question. The way I'm trying to answer it is, does it behave the same in simulations where you can see globally averaged quantities of different galaxies? And it does.
So,
but this is because, you know, it's the same process in every little galaxy.
So they are all part of the same tree,
right? But they are offset with each other.
No, but I mean, even in a simulation of turbulence, you could try to get some volumes and measure PDF locally. Or in your fractal, you could show the global PDF. What is the global PDF?
Yeah, but the non-linearity doesn't come from the global PDF.
No, but what is the global PDF?
What is the global PDF? Have you averaged over everything in your whole box, you get a log normal PDF or not?
I don't know. I haven't done that. In simulations, I haven't done that.
In your simulation, you have to.
In the toy model, these are global.
These are global.
Yes. These are not. Okay, so it's not the global one that is doing it. It's how these different patches change their PDF, and they do it in a very non-linear fashion. And that's why I couldn't find. I tried actually to play the game with the PDF, other people have tried playing with the PDF. Elmer Green was the pioneer in this, right, in 2003. And more recently, Wada and Norman have a paper in 2007 where they sift the PDF and try to find it. But you get a linear slope if you assume a universal PDF. The PDF has to change to get the non-linearity. That's what I realized.
But so your best PDF will be to fit the observation will be the black dotted red and purple dashed line, essentially.
I believe that these correspond wider PDFs. That's one thing you do find in simulations is, and I have a few references there, and there are more actually, both Eulerian simulations as well as SPAs tend to find the same thing. More massive galaxies have wider PDFs, and dwarfs have narrower PDFs.
Yeah, but if you normalize it, so what is the sigma of the PDF, the standard deviation?
I don't know. I haven't done it. I mean, yeah. I didn't fit the formula to tell you the sigma.
Yeah, we'll have to check if it's very easy because it is a little too wide.
But this is just a proof of concept, you know. I kept making the PDF larger and larger to see how far it can go, and it saturates, that's why. And probably, I mean, it might be that this thing is too wide, but, you know, it's just to make a point.
Yeah, because rho zero is the mean, right, density, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so it seems that the peak is a little bit too far on the left to be a realistic one. Even for Mach 40, it would be too far.
Well, but you do find these kind of things in simulations.
No, you do. But it seems to me that the peak is too far to the left. That's too wide.
It's probably too wide for a galaxy like the Milky Way. Mach numbers above 100 are not necessarily unreasonable for stars.
Yeah,
it's
from a very large scale.
Yeah, I mean, the velocity dispersion in Arc 220 is 80 kilometers a second.
But for the cold gas?
For the CEO. Yeah.
Okay, why don't we thank Klaus for speaking.